From London, BBC Caribbean Report.
CARICOM leaders urged to attempt to meet the challenges of the 21st century. A vote to resolve St. Lucia's banana leadership controversy being challenged, and 1 year later, relatives of the crew of the MV Phantom still mourning the loss of loved ones. I'm Ken Richards, and this is BBC Caribbean Report.
My brother heads of government, we find ourselves in a position that a century and a millennium have caught up with us, finding us and perhaps leaving us with a menu of unfinished business. We find ourselves on the brink of the 21st century with our perspectives, our policies, and our plans seemingly tethered, if not securely anchored, in the century that is shutting down around us.
CARICOM Chairman Basde Opande of Trinidad and Tobago opening the Community Leaders Mini Summit in Chagaramas earlier today. The Caribbean community's heads of government are meeting today and Wednesday to clear up unfinished business since the main summit in July. Our correspondent Tony Fraser has been keeping up with today's discussions and joins me now live from Chagaramas. Tony, what was at the top of the agenda today?
Definitely, Ken, the business of the single market and the economy, and they are not even trying to clean it up from the last summit, but they have been trying to establish the single market and the economy for the last 25 years. And according to Mr. Pandey, Prime Minister Pandey, and it's not the first time he has said it, that they need to finish the business of the 20th century before they can move into the 21st century. They have got to, in Mr. Pandey's words, speed up the momentum.
Is it not chastening that at every meeting we lament the slow pace of progress? That lament has become a mantra that emphasizes to Caribbean people the continued inability of their leaders to step up the momentum towards important program objectives. I submit that the time has come for us to re-engineer the process and the mechanisms by and through which we take decisions and set out to make things work.
Basde Opande. So, Tony, any sense of radical reform coming as a result of the meeting?
Well, it's probably a little bit too early to say so, Ken. The leaders have been at it all day talking about all kinds of things. One of the significant things Mr. Pandey mentioned has been the restructuring and the reforming of the CARICOM Secretariat, which is required if the Secretariat is to run with the decisions taken by the leaders at the heads of government's meeting. So perhaps it's a little bit early to say yes or no if there is going to be radical reform.
We understand that Haiti was up for discussion today. What exactly took place?
Well, yes, Prime Minister James Mitchell of St. Vincent talked about Haiti. He presented the report, and essentially, as he said to journalists after, CARICOM continues to monitor the preparations for elections, and CARICOM will give full technical assistance in that process. And he said that President Préval said that the earliest date for elections would be March 2000.
And Guyana, was it also being discussed?
Yes, as we speak, Guyana has been the subject of discussion all afternoon. And a moment ago, I spoke with President Barret Jagdeo, and he, one of the major situations is a report presented by St. Lucia Prime Minister Dr. Kenny Anthony about the situation in Guyana. And according to President Barret, President Jagdeo, the important thing is to get both himself and Mr. Desmond Hoyt, to sit down to the table. And according to President Jagdeo, he is ready.
So I have clarified the issues and the mandate, but I extended an invitation to Mr. Hoyt as a Guyanese leader to sit down with me and let's talk about issues of mutual interest.
What is Mr. Anthony proposing?
Well, he's proposing that we meet. I am willing to meet. My invitation still stands, but I cannot meet Mr. Hoyt under any preconditions. He has set about four preconditions before he even considers meeting me.
Guyana's President Barret Jagdeo was speaking a short while ago with Tony Fraser. So, Tony, what's on the agenda? Very quickly, what's on the agenda for the final day Wednesday?
I think the big thing on the agenda tomorrow, Ken, is talk about the Caribbean Court of Justice. The agreement will not be signed at this conference. That has been made quite clear. But the leaders will sit down and talk about it. And, you know, the discussion, the debate will have to go on in the Guyana and the Jamaica parliaments before there is any serious contemplation of signing of the document.
Thank you, Tony Fraser, live on the line from Chagaramas in Trinidad and Tobago. Key trade ministers have at the World Trade Organization's preparatory meeting ahead of the Seattle talks agreed to show more flexibility in tackling new global free trade negotiations. But although there have been expressions of goodwill at the Lausanne meeting, the differences remain significant. The BBC's Claire Dool told me that after 2 days of talks, the trade ministers are as far apart as ever on the agenda for a new round of global trade talks.
Nothing was resolved, and to be quite fair to the 25 economies that were represented at the meeting, nobody ever thought anything was going to be resolved. I think the differences remain considerable.
So what happens next?
The Swiss, who were hosting this meeting, said that they had a commitment from all of the trade ministers that they'd told their ambassadors, who are here at the World Trade Organization in Geneva, that they must be flexible in negotiations. So these negotiations will go on for the next few weeks before Seattle, when they will try and work out whether the new global trade round is going to be a narrow one, just focusing on agriculture and services, as they have to do, because this is the so-called built-in agenda from previous trade rounds, or whether it's going to be a broader trade round and look at things like government procurement and competition rules, things which the United States doesn't necessarily want on the agenda, and the developing world certainly don't want on the agenda, because they say they've had problems enough trying to implement some of the free trade measures which were agreed last time round.
The Caribbean has said it's after a rewriting of the existing WTO rules. What chance does any of the ACP countries have of achieving this?
Well, I think, of course, if you asked any of the developing countries what they think of the previous round, the Uruguay round, they would say that it was pretty unfair, and they certainly don't want the mistakes of the Uruguay round repeated. But I would think that their chances of getting any of this renegotiated are very slim. The U.S. Trade Representative Charlene Barshefsky said that America, for example, was interested in the implementation of the previous trade round, especially agriculture and services, but renegotiation for the US really wasn't on the table.
The BBC's Claire Dool. An election to resolve a leadership squabble in St. Lucia's important banana industry has ended in controversy. The vote came at an emergency shareholders' meeting of the St. Lucia Banana Corporation, forced by a group of farmers calling for the removal of Corporation Chairman Patrick Joseph. Pete Ninvalin Castries reports that although the election returned Mr. Joseph to the corporation, his detractors are challenging the outcome of the poll.
St. Lucia's foreign ministry, which said the banana squabble was hampering international lobbying efforts, was breathing a sigh of relief with the election process over. This was the reaction of Foreign Minister George Odlum.
I'm very pleased that whatever differences there were have been resolved in a democratic manner. And I just hope now that both sides of the dispute could get together and consolidate the position in the interests of St. Lucia and bananas in the region.
But Mr. Odlum's hopes were dashed when the man behind the bid to remove Patrick Joseph as SLBC chairman announced that he would not accept defeat. Mr. Fred Flood, who failed to win the support from farmers that he needed to become SLBC chairman, claims that yesterday's elections were fraudulent.
In issuing of the notices for that meeting, there was clearly a violation, because the company law or the bylaws governing SLBC says that notices have to be served not less than 7 days. That policy was not observed. I do not accept the fate.
Mr. Flood is president of the Banana Salvation Committee, which had been calling for the removal of Mr. Joseph on the grounds of mismanagement and arrogance in the discharge of his duties. But Mr. Joseph was magnanimous in victory. He said it was an overwhelming endorsement of his programs, which he intends to continue. Come back home was his call to his detractors. But clearly, even if they do, St. Lucia's problem-plagued banana industry will, at least in the near future, remain a divided household. This is Pete Ninval in Castries, St. Lucia for BBC Caribbean Report.
Honduras' Finance Minister Gabriela Nunes has called on the country's creditors to declare a permanent debt moratorium on the first anniversary of Hurricane Mitch. She told the BBC that while the country has received most of the $2.7 billion in promised aid, Honduras was still having to borrow more money to pay for critical reconstruction projects, and the donors are refusing to support. Our correspondent Peter Grester, who covered Hurricane Mitch 1 year ago, reports on how Honduras and its neighbors are faring.
Exactly 12 months have passed since Hurricane Mitch tore through Central America, killing more than 9,000 people and leaving at least 2 million others homeless. At the time, one aid official told me it was as if Mitch had used a map of the region's poorest zones to decide where to rain the hardest. But for all the drama at the time, the storm's legacy is, if anything, even more apparent now. In the Honduran capital, Tegucigalpa, aid officials said at least 20,000 people are still living in sports stadiums and temporary shacks, many of them on steep slopes or low-lying floodplains that were dangerous before Mitch, but are, if anything, even more perilous now. The total damage bill then came to some $10 billion. Promised aid amounted to $9 billion. And while it was welcome help, the Honduran Finance Minister Gabriela Nunes told me that its limitations are now becoming apparent. More than half of that aid was in the form of cheap loans, hardly helpful to a country already struggling with more than $4 billion in debts, and she said most of the donations were tied to specific social projects.
There are some projects that the international community do not make donations, so we had to look for the loans, especially for the management of the rivers.
Hundreds of kilometers of rivers are still clogged with silt. Without urgent but hugely expensive dredging, the waterways overflow with as little as 2 centimeters of rain. By having to resort to loans to pay for it, the government is slipping ever deeper into debt. Gabriela Nunes called on the country's creditors to convert a temporary moratorium on repayments into permanent debt relief. The situation is much the same for Nicaragua, if not worse. Maria Rivarola of the British aid agency Oxfam told me one village still has a huge donated freezer to store perishable food, but no electricity to power it. And around the Casitas volcano, where a huge mudslide wiped out an entire village of some 1,200 people, psychological problems continue to cripple the survivors. But Maria Rivarola said the news isn't all bad. Many of those survivors are starting to band together to rebuild their lives in spite of, rather than because of, government help, and they're doing it in places and with materials that should stand up to the next big storm.
Peter Grester. It'll also be a year tomorrow since the cruise ship the MV Phantom disappeared in the Caribbean Sea during Hurricane Mitch. All 31 crew members died, 21 of them were of Caribbean origin. As Mitch approached, the ship put off its passengers and set out to sea to ride out the storm, but the vessel was caught in the storm. None of the bodies have ever been recovered. It led to a lawsuit against the company, and as Orrin Gordon reports, it's far from settled 1 year later.
In Guyana, where the largest number of the Caribbean crew come from, a memorial service is being planned. Meanwhile, in the Miami office of the lawyer who represents the cruise ship company Windjammer Barefoot Cruises, they're still having to deal with 17 different lawsuits. Windjammer's lawyers have reached agreement with the families of 14 of the crewmen. New Orleans-based James Cobb is one of Windjammer's lawyers.
We have, in the last year, fought through a great deal of grief and a great deal of tragedy. With the loss of these crew members who were not just employees of our company, but friends and treated like members of our family. In terms of handling the cases of these people, Captain Burke, the owner of the company, has indicated that he wants to take care of the children and the wives as best we possibly can.
Back in Georgetown, two Windjammer representatives, Tel Newson and Peter Sturd, had lunch with some of the relatives and are to take part in tomorrow's service. One man who won't be going is Vernon Brush, whose son, also named Vernon, was one of the victims of the Phantom disaster. Mr. Brush Sr. has no idea of where it's taking place, and in any case, he told me, Georgetown is too far away from New Amsterdam, the eastern Guyanese town where most of the crewmen come from. Mr. Brush told me that Windjammer's settlement offer is unacceptable.
The offer, a settlement, yes, we rejected. They offer us $3,000 and we rejected.
Mr. Brush and the families of the 16 other crew members want a settlement much closer to the $1 million per crew member that their Miami lawyer is demanding. Life jackets and debris from the shipwreck have been found, but no bodies. 1 year later, it's difficult to say what will constitute a settlement for the families in the true sense of the word.
Orin Gordon, and that's it for today's edition of BBC Caribbean Report. Just a reminder that
this and our other programs can be accessed on our internet website at www.bbc.co.uk/Caribbean.
Join us at 11.05, 11.15 and 12.10 GMT for our next morning programs. I'm Ken Richards, saying goodbye from London.